Welcome, Pewter Report readers and listeners, to another edition of the Pewter Nation podcast. I am Mark Cook, along with longtime publisher and beat writer and amigo and conspiracy theorist.
Yep.
We were talking about all this stuff before we got on the podcast. Mr. Scott Reynolds. And
Long-time conspiracy theorist, Scott Reynolds.
Exactly. And I don't even know how to describe Trevor's outfit today, so I won't. Just be glad this is only audio and not video.
True. That's accurate.
Not a good look. Although I noticed, Trevor, you've got a few admirers on Twitter, a couple lady friends I was looking at the other day.
I mean,
they're digging the main.
I mean,
yeah.
Who doesn't? I know you do deep down.
I just always want to reply back to him. If you only knew him, though. I mean, I understand.
Wow, man.
If you only knew him, see?
That hurts.
Anyway, we want to thank everybody
for a year, man. That hurts.
We want to thank everybody for tuning in. We want to thank our good sponsor and good partner for the last year and going into our second year, a good partnership with our good friends over at Forge Garage, with great locations in Wesley Chapel, in Brandon, down in Estero, which is near Fort Myers, up in Dearborn, Michigan. If you're up that way, stop by Orlando, Lakeland coming soon, Countryside, West Chase. If you want a great burger, you want some great Americana food is what I call it, Forge Garage is the place to go. And they have an amazing happy hour special. Their happy hours specials run all day long, premium wells, terrific drinks, terrific food. If you've never had funnel cake fries and you're not diabetic, ooh, I recommend getting the funnel cake fries.
Yes.
They are amazing.
Yes. I actually went there for Cinco de Mayo of all days.
Did you?
Yes.
How was it?
I got my Corona Light there.
Nice.
So, and some nachos. It was great.
They're terrific.
Their pork nachos are tremendous.
No, it may be the best value in the restaurant.
Yeah.
Because you can't eat the full order of them, really. I mean, two people can share that as a meal.
Challenge accepted.
Okay, I take
Trevor.
That back. Yeah.
Trevor's,
I've got a 17-year-old son that would be like, let's go. Yeah. It's on. But anyway, make sure to check out Ford's Garage. And when you stop by, let them know that you're a big fan of the Pewter Nation podcast, as they are a sponsor of that. Fellas, the draft is over. We're glad about that. We've talked about the draft. We don't have to talk about the draft anymore for a few more months. Depending on how this team does, we won't be talking about it until hopefully late December next year. But it's you can smell football, right?
Hey, we're actually going to get to watch some football for the first time at One Buccaneer Place.
Yeah.
This weekend.
Yeah, the rookies are all in town, and we're going to get to see them on the field a little bit. Now, again, they're not going to be out there banging helmets and banging pads and doing Oklahoma
drills. It's football, pretty much.
Right.
But that's the problem with Dirk Koetter, is that at this rookie minicamp, it should be full contact, all right?
I don't think that he believes in full contact.
Running gassers, if you mess up, if you fumble it, you're running a full mile,
Yeah, I'm
that's
with you.
Real football.
I'm with you.
Let him hit.
I was at my son's high school football practice yesterday for spring football. The linebacker unit had a bad day. They literally had to stay 15 minutes late, and they just ran sprints for 15 minutes. I felt terrible for the kids.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's funny how the younger kids get abused more than the guys making the millions of dollars. But that's what having a good lawyer and a CBA will do for you, apparently. I told my son he should become like the CBA director or the
– create the high school football
unionize.
Union.
Yes, unionize.
Unionize the
there
high
you
schoolers.
Go.
Yeah.
Perfectly. But anyway, now, again – what we can tell, and Scott, you've seen a million of these rookie mini camps. This will be
I wouldn't say a million. I'm not
close,
that old.
Close. 100,000 at least.
Okay, at least 100,000.
And I've seen about 8 of them. Trevor, this will be your second one. What can we really kind of gain and gather from this?
Funny you should mention that. I'm writing about this in my Fab Five a little bit. There has always been a player or two that's really just kind of jumped out, mm-hmm. right? That's been a little bit of a surprise. I remember the ones that stand out to me. I remember Donnie Abraham in 1996 just looked like a pro out there.
Right.
And this was a guy that was third-round draft pick out of East Tennessee State. He ended up using that to springboard to a great training camp to starting as a rookie under Monty Kiffin, which is very, very hard to do. But he was a starter in 1996, got his first interception against John Elway, of mm-hmm. all people. And so there's always a guy that kind of just stands out. And I remember in 2009 when Josh Freeman was drafted, it was really Mike Williams was the guy making the acrobatic catches at the fourth round pick. It wasn't really Aurelius Ben, the receiver taken in the second round. It was Mike Williams that had a tremendous showing there and really parlayed that into a great rookie season, almost got 1,000 yards and was the Bucs' leading receiver that year. So I think those are some some instances that jump out, some guys that jump out. Quan Alexander was one that you witnessed, Mark, mm-hmm. with me just a couple years ago. Yeah. It seems like yesterday. It's been really 4 years. But Quan Alexander was a guy that you and I weren't really high on.
Right.
He didn't have the best highlight tape coming out of LSU, and they really drafted him on traits, attitude, mm-hmm. and in the things he did well. But he didn't, because of the strong side linebacker position at LSU, didn't really have a lot of splash plays on tape. But he stood out like a sore thumb at the rookie minicamp. And he, of course, took that and ran with it and was the starter on opening day.
Ran Bruce Carter out of town that they had just signed, yeah. You know, that spring. So.
Right. So and it's not always the guys that shine, though. I mean, we have to look back at last year. And I remember, you know, Mike Evans was the real deal. At his rookie minicamp. I mean, he just showed up, and you're like, yep, that's why they drafted him, yeah. with the 7th overall pick. Same with O.J. Howard last year. He made some fantastic catches. The player that was a little under the radar who dropped a lot of passes, ironically, was Chris Godwin. Did not have a good rookie minicamp, yeah. but then really came on during OTAs and had a great training camp. Mm-hmm. And I think we saw him carry that over and have a very successful rookie season. So you can't – this is not the make-or-break minicamp for all rookies. You can have a guy like Godwin who's just doesn't look that great, but then, you know, gets the worries and the jitterbugs out of his system. But then you've got guys that just, you know, just stand out like sore thumbs.
Like and Joey Iosefa did a few years ago.
No, Joey Iosefa did not, actually.
No?
Yeah, no.
Danny Fidali, though.
Danny Vitale?
A little more than Joey.
A little more than Joey, yeah.
A little more than Joey. But, we can go back a few years ago to a guy like Adam Humphries, who, mm-hmm. again...
Tryout player.
Wasn't even a draft pick, but there was just something you saw about the guy, a dependable guy. And, again, mm-hmm. we had no idea in May, 3 years ago, that Adam Humphries was going to end up, you know, making $2.9 million this year.
You know, it wasn't just Adam Humphries. Dante Dye was also a tryout player from Heidelberg, and yep. both those guys ended up being on the roster that year eventually.
Yep. I mean, and guys can, you know, Cameron Brate was a tryout player a few years ago. So, you know, what I like to look at, we expect the 7 or 8 guys that end up getting drafted or however many it might be during the course of a year to look their part. But what's fun to me is to see those unknown guys who really, and you can see it. And here's a perfect example. Here's a guy who didn't last year, Jeremy McNichols, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a guy who... through training camp, OTAs,
fair, the OTAs, though, he did have the shoulder injury, so he really didn't come on until training camp. Like Kendall Beckwith, but Beckwith, like, he was the kind of guy that made that immediate impact in training camp.
But as soon as you first saw him on the field, I mean, you just get a vibe, you know, this guy's a special guy, or this guy right. is just another guy.
Yeah.
And McNichols was a guy that, to me, was just, we just, throughout, whenever we saw him on the field, eventually, just shook our head and said, you know, we just don't understand this pick at all. And it turned out to be just a bad pick. But anyway, you listen.
You think training camp lasts forever, though. I mean, like in McNichols' case, I mean, all of a sudden it was like, all right, yeah, it's first week, he's getting his feet wet, he's coming back from the injury. Second week, all right, you know, he's still getting his feet. And all of a sudden it's like, okay, it's week 3 and you still
even
going to
make this roster?
And all of a sudden it's like fourth week and you're like, oh, they might cut this guy.
Right.
We think that training camp and even, you know, rookie mini camp, all of that, we think that it flies by. Or no, we actually think that it lasts forever. It almost feels like getting to the regular season. Right. But for these guys, and it starts in rookie minicamp.
Yeah.
It's important. You've got to be able to kind of make your – especially for a lot of these trial players. And, you know, you were talking about some of the guys who came on, Cam Brate, Adam Humphries, Dante Dye, guys who were – and I know that people are listening to this podcast, and they're probably going to say, like, give us a couple of names, like mm-hmm. a couple of guys who are rookie minicamp guys who, like, could be – I don't know.
Like, you mean like tryout guys?
Yeah, surprise mm-hmm. guys to make the team or something. And – here's the thing. Like, I can give you, like, a couple – like, obviously, we've talked about Godwin Iwuike. I think it's how you say his mm-hmm. name. And then the kid from – the running back from Duke. What's his name?
Sean Wilson. Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, we can name off a couple of those. But then, like, these other guys, we don't know. Like, if they were good – if we thought they were good, they would have been drafted. Like, that's the whole part of it.
Or at least signed, right?
Right, something. Yeah. And so that has a lot to go into it as well, is that – we can give you a couple of names, and we kind of already have in the last podcast, but in terms of, you know, going over all of the 58 guys they have on the list, we're not going to be able to see it until – we'll have some updates certainly as it goes on and afterwards if we impress this. But going into it, it's hard to compile this list of of, hey, yeah, this guy might surprise, because if we really genuinely thought that, he would have been a signed guy.
He would have been signed undrafted free agent.
These are players who are really almost stepping onto the field, and within these 2 days, playing some of their best football.
Right.
That is so hard. I was thinking about that earlier today as I was writing the article of getting the list up. And so that's over at peterport.com if you guys want to see all of the participants for this week's rookie minicamp. That you have 2 days, and it's not even like a two full. What is it? An hour and a half?
Yeah,
it's an hour and a half each day.
Right.
30 minutes is warm ups.
Right.
You know how good? How much can you separate yourself in a warm? There's already guys who were drafted.
Yep.
There's already guys who were signed as undrafted free agents, and you've still got to try and separate yourself within 3 hours.
And not just that, the team already had enough conviction to sign some undrafted free agents. Right. Those are different than tryout guys. Right.
Right.
They had conviction enough to sign those undrafted free agents, sometimes guaranteeing part of their base salary, right, giving them some signing bonus money. But not only do you have to shine if you're a tryout player, you have to hope that some of these other guys that you're trying to take their spot on the 90-man roster, you're hoping some of these guys crap the bed to allow you to have that opportunity for General Manager Jason Light and John Spytek and Mike Beal and Dirk Cutter to sit there and say, you know what, this guy looked really good and this guy didn't, so we can swap these two guys out. And that happens a couple of times. Evan Pamphill, the defensive end, not to be confused with Kevin
brother
Pamphill.
Kevin.
This is Evan Pamphill.
No relation.
No
relation, as hockey analysts would say.
A tryout. It's funny because they both went to Purdue. But they
no relation, not the same Purdue either.
It was the same Purdue.
Farms, the chicken manufacturer, and one went to the university.
We'll one's related to Sonny Perdue,
Evan
and Pamphill,
no relation. Went to Purdue, also no relation. plays the game of football, no relation.
But there is that instance where you will have a player or two that will make an impression. You know, one of the guys I think to keep an eye on, just because of the position, is Jordan Huff, the Northern Illinois running back.
Mm.
That's one guy to keep in mind. 5'10", 218 pounds. You know, they didn't run the ball a lot with him, but he did have
somebody's going
over
to be on the radar for running back. Whether they're not on the team yet and they're going to sign somebody, or I think they're. We've heard that obviously they're okay with what they have right now,
right.
But you know, you've talked about this a lot, Scott. They're one injury away from being the exact same rushing team they were last year.
Peyton Barber, Charles
minus
Sims,
Doug Martin, which whatever
Jack
you want
Rogers.
To say about Doug Martin. Was the most talented running back on the roster last year.
Yes.
He just didn't have it, obviously, mentally. Couldn't get the vision. Sometimes the blocking wasn't there, whatever you want to call it. They're one injury away from being that again.
That's right.
And they can't afford. I mean, you've written this. Mark has written this, too, especially with Jameis going all the way back to his days at Florida State, being able to have a good running game to complement him, or the right running game, especially.
And we all know that Jacquizz Rodgers.
You don't want to have that risk.
Yeah, Jacquizz Rodgers and Charles Sims are not the long-term answer. You don't want those guys on the roster, you know, 2-3 years from now at all. You want Ronald Jones to be the guy, Peyton Barber to be, you know, in the rotation, and you want to have another running back or two. And is that going to be Sean Wilson? Is it going to be Jordan Huff? Is it going to be somebody that's not on this roster? That remains to be seen. Another position, Trevor, aside from running back, that they still want to throw more bodies at and make sure that they get the right guys is safety. They waited until the fourth round to get Jordan Whitehead. Who knows if he's going to pan out? They did sign Gordon Igwebuike. We'll see how he fares, but there's a couple other safeties in this mix that I've been given a heads up to look out for in the tryouts. And one of them is from Syracuse. The other one's from Clemson. Van Smith from Clemson is one of those guys. And I think it's Mark Jordan from Syracuse is another. So those are some names to kind of keep an eye on. At the safety position, and we'll see who shows up on Friday and Saturday.
You know, you were talking about, you know, the short amount of time they have to make an impression. Another thing going against these guys, this is a lot better football team talent-wise than it was 3 or 4 years ago. So the opportunities for a guy like does Adam Humphries and Cameron Brate make this team as a tryout player
today
versus, you know, 3 or 4 years ago?
Again, it's opportunity. Timing and opportunity. Timing is, when you get to the NFL, a lot of these guys are good. I mean, and you wonder, you know, we go through the scenarios all the time. Well, I mean, like, it was the Wes Welker thing, you know, like, he was on the Dolphins. I think he might have been on another team before he got to the Patriots, too, and all of a sudden he goes to the Patriots and he's basically, you know,
becomes that guy.
Yeah. And you know, same thing in Denver, all that kind of stuff. And people wonder, like, oh, we had this guy and then we couldn't. Timing's a big deal.
It is.
Timing, the right coaching staff.
The scheme that they run, the
right,
type of offense,
right.
Sure.
Who the quarterback is, all that kinds of stuff. The timing's right. So, you know, guys like Adam Humphries, Dante Dye, you know, Cameron Brate especially, you know, they're cashing in on the timing. Obviously, they put in the work. They do the stuff. But when you get to the NFL, a lot of these guys are good. Sometimes it's about finding the right timing.
You mentioned some guys are going to get cut this year that are going to be good players. Just look at the defensive line. I mean, you talk about from famine to feast. I mean, this team went from having
an
empty cupboard to one that's not just stocked, that's almost overflowing. Yeah. If you go down the list of let's say they keep nine guys, right? You know, Gerald McCoy, Vita Vea, Bo Allen, Mitch Unrein, those are four guys that can play defensive tackle. Mm-hmm. They're sticking. Then you've got JPP, Vinnie Curry, Noah Spence, and Will Golston. You know, that's eight guys right there.
Right.
Right. And then are they going to keep Will Clark? He played a major role last year on defense, got a lot of snaps. Are they going to keep Stevie Tuikulavatu, who, you know, didn't get to see the field, but he was a draft pick from last year?
Right.
Are they going to keep Devontae Lambert, who this team genuinely likes because of his ability to go inside and out? I mean, you know, if they keep eight, I mean, there's going to
be some actual decisions.
Yeah, there's going to be some guys that are going to be immediately getting signed by other teams for depth.
It's crazy to think how this defensive line has turned around. If you go to that last game, last New Year's Eve against New Orleans, and you look at those four they lined up to start that game, in my wildest dreams, I could not have envisioned. And again, I don't know how good they're going to be. We'll have to see. I think a lot better coaching with Brenson Buckner for sure this year. But I could have not in my wildest dreams thought, even figured out a way that Dirk Koetter could have improved this. I mean, I'm not sorry, Dirk Koetter. Jason Light could have improved this defensive line as much as he did in the offseason. So, again, it's all on paper right now. And that's kind of what the players told me at Donovan Smith's thing the other day when I tried to talk to him a little bit more about some of the scheme and things they're going to do. You know, it's all on paper right now. There's a lot of guys on this football team that can play football. But until we line up, put on pads, and do it, you know, we'll have to see how it pans out.
One of the things that I'm writing about in the SR's Fab Five, and I'll talk about it here just to give a little bit of verbal context to it, is just when you have the roster that you have right now at the defensive line and you throw Vita Vea into the mix, the different packages you can come up with for different personnel situations. Like, for example, let's look at short yardage, third and one, or goal line situations. Now you can keep Gerald McCoy in the middle of that defense, or if you really wanted to add some more beef there, you can put Vita Vea and Bo Allen at the defensive tackle spot, along with Will Golston, who is close to 300 pounds, around 290 pounds, at one defensive end, and Gerald McCoy on the other side.
And Gerald McCoy could almost be like a 4-eye, you know, like almost
exactly.
Like a D-end.
Can I just say that Gerald McCoy would be the first defensive lineman I'm taking off the field on third and one, though?
True, exactly. And if that's the case, then you can go ahead and put JPP there or someone like that.
Right.
But what I'm saying is you can have four guys that are almost 300 pounds or more across the board that give you that beef. If you're looking for a designated nickel pass rush defense, like a jet package, right? That could be Noah Spence at left end, JPP at right end. You could have Gerald McCoy inside his 1-3 tech and bring in Vinnie Curry. He played that role at Philadelphia and played it well, very much like how Robert Ayers was used in Tampa, moving a defensive end inside as a nickel rusher as the other 3 tech alongside of Gerald McCoy. And that puts a lot of speed and pass rushing ability on the field. So
I still envision a, you know, like a third and eight situation where Noah Spence is like a stand-up linebacker. I hope they let Noah Spence be a stand-up linebacker this year. I guess I would like to see how comfortable he is with it, because that is a big deal. Whether, you know, you have your hand in the ground or not, that's just about how comfortable you are. But I just feel like when Spence was forced to play with his hand in the ground and truly be like a D-end, they just weren't getting the most out of him. And I would much rather Spence be, you know, you throw out a lot of these names, a lot of these guys who have a lot of size. I would love to see a package where it's like Curry and JPP are the ends, McCoy, actually, you could even do it where Golston is in there too, and McCoy is in there. So those are the four down linemen, mm-hmm. however you want to mix them up. And then Noah Spence is a fifth rusher, mm-hmm. but he's coming as like a stand-up rusher. So you're throwing five at the pocket, and those are five legit people
yeah.
who can get to the pocket. I mean, that's what Jaguars do,
yeah,
right?
Yep.
Calais Campbell, he said that. He's like, what are you thankful for this year? They asked him that on the Christmas Day, or mm-hmm. on – right around their Thanksgiving game. They asked him, what are you thankful for this year? And he smiled and he said, I'm thankful for a defensive coordinator that lets all four of us go after the quarterback every single snap.
Yeah.
We don't have roles. We don't go, you're taking up this gap to free up this guy, or you're stunting this way to get to this way. No, the ball is hiked, and our defensive coordinator has a competition
ball.
And says, first one to the ball.
Right.
You know, it's that kind of a thing. And I would love for the Buccaneers to set up a culture like that when it comes to
pass rushing. Ow, Scott, my back is hurting. Ow. Wonder if I should go somewhere and get it checked out. What do you think?
You probably should. If you're having any type of muscle pain, stiffness, lack of motion, Fitness Tech is the place to go. I've actually been there.
Good.
Kevin Vada and his staff work wonders. They deal in muscle activation techniques that are crazy, because you always think of muscle groupings being pectoral muscles or quadriceps or hamstrings or biceps, these big muscle groups, but it really it's the small muscle groups in your lower back, in your side, in your upper back, that if one of those muscles is out of whack, it can create imbalance in your body. And then all of a sudden, because muscles aren't firing and they're not working on the left side of your body, you've got these painful knots and pinched nerves on the right side. And so the key to that is not just always going to a chiropractor or getting a massage. It's activating the muscles on the left side or your weaker side and bringing balance to your body to prevent those knots from reoccurring and really just to have you live a more healthy and active and pain-free life. So I highly recommend Fitness Tech. Kevin Vada is a guy that will blow your mind with some of the ways that he can check those muscles to see if they're activating through your legs, your back, your shoulders, all that stuff. So if you're having pain, go see him on the web at fitness-tech.com.
How do you spell that? I'm trying to Google it, Scott.
FITNESS-TEK.
K, that's why I couldn't find it.
.com. Fitness Tech, that's with a T-E-K, .com.
Very good. All right, I might have to do that because I'm very uncomfortable in these
you look uncomfortable.
Chairs that you
that
have.
That hurts from carrying this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. I've been doing good. It for about 83 episodes now, boys. Anyway, I haven't missed a single one. Have I? I don't think
yeah.
I have.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I had the flu.
Yeah, you've missed
yeah,
a couple.
Yeah, you were down with the count with the flu, and Trevor and I did one up in Mobile.
You know who hasn't missed a podcast?
Trevor. Well, it's because you run the equipment. Scott,
dang right I do.
I have no idea.
Dang right I do. Yeah.
We really ought. I mean, if he could get killed on the way home.
If we skip
probably
a week, it's because Trevor's sick.
Right. Or dead.
Yeah.
We'll bring somebody in if he dies, but it may be a week or two gap before we can get him up to date. Don't make sure the equipment doesn't get damaged in the accident.
Yeah, no.
If you don't
yeah,
mind.
No. If somebody's coming at me head on, I'll make sure I turn the right way to where I sacrifice my body for yeah. the
get
great,
T-boned,
for the greater
sure,
good of this $150.
Can you?
Yeah. Make sure the equipment
podcast recording.
Could you put the equipment in a seatbelt? Do you mind doing that?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah, all right.
I do that with my public subs anyways.
And if you have to slam on the brakes, do like our parents did in the 70s. Just put your arm up to hold it,
right.
Because that's always
going to
keep
the
body.
The toll booth.
Yeah,
that's
work.
The toll booth
that'll work.
Technique.
You know, thank God we never actually got in a head-on collision, because not only would I have went through the windshield, my mother's arm would have been snapped, because, I mean, she wasn't going to stop me if we would have hit a semi head-on. So
yeah, but the
anyway.
Thing is, cars were made out of steel back then, too.
That's true.
You know, it's like you could survive head-on collisions. Head-on collisions back then were like fender benders.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
With the big boats of the cars.
Just
like the
go through the windshield, get up, dust yourself off.
Yeah.
You're like, crap, we got to call Dad to pick us up. But anyway, all right. So rookie minicamp this weekend, we're going to have access on Friday and Saturday.
Can we talk about your Tony Gadget piece? Because
no.
It was really good.
No, it was really
talk
good.
About that.
Can we?
No.
Yeah.
We can talk about the Ring of Honor, though, for sure. But if people want to read the Tony Dungy piece, we've only tweeted about 973 times. So it's out there for people to see. But I appreciate it. I like to write those type of things. But it takes, you know, something unique to really get you inspired to write those things. I mean, last year you wrote the thing on Richard Zeller that passed away, Trevor.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And, and Scott, you know, when you write a column, just sometimes things just hit you. Like it was, I don't know, the other night about 10:30, I come home from bowling. Mm-hmm. Was it bowling or was it the next night? I can't even remember. So
it was late,
next
and you
night.
Were just like, "I'm gonna have a Tony Dungy piece for the next day."
Yeah,
I was like,
and
"All
you,
right."
And you just start writing, and unfortunately, Scott had to clean up the mess, because when you write those type of columns, just for people who are interested in writing, you just got to get it out as fast as you can.
Yeah,
you know, get your while it's in your head, while you're inspired.
It's not even flowing; it's like a flood, right?
Yeah. You just get it out there on paper. And then
actually,
and
computers, then, we don't use paper.
I still do.
Do you really?
No. Ira Kaufman still transcribes his quotes on paper.
Do you? No.
Yeah. But I have a manual typewriter too. So anyway, you get it out, and then Scott puts the finishing touches on it and rewords different things, which is also, you know, everybody patting me on the back. It's always a team effort, everything we do here. But anyway, I appreciate that it was. You know, Tony was a guy, and I don't exaggerate this, and one of the first things I wrote in the column was, you know, we do tend, whether when a person dies, when a person leaves the job, whatever it is, we tend to romanticize it because mm-hmm. we remember all the great times, right? I mean, there were some bad, there were some frustrating times with Tony Dungy as a head coach. I mean,
mostly offensively, yeah.
There's no question about it. And I'll be honest with you, when Tony got fired, what hurt was watching the way that it went down. Okay, I mean, the guy's literally by himself toting a cardboard box full of stuff.
In the rain.
There happened to be, I think it was Channel 8 might have been out there and captured. I can't remember which
Bay
station.
Bay News 9, Rock Raleigh was out there.
Bay, you know, yeah. And maybe Channel 13 too. And so you see Tony Dungy, right? It's like your father, your grandfather, you know what I mean, getting kicked out of the house.
What was bad was the Blazers allowed him to come out and do his post-season press conference to wrap up the loss at the Vet. Yeah. And then, like, within the hour, news breaks that he got fired.
Right.
You know?
And you know, and you hated to see it. But I will say this. As a person who really, you know, loved the team at the time, as people listening are, as a fan at the time, you know, it didn't break my heart. You know what I mean? I hurt for Tony Dungy, but I felt like the Glazers and a large segment of the fans at that time, something needed to be done.
Yeah.
I just had zero confidence that Tony Dungy was going to get that team
through three offensive coordinators the last 3 years.
Including Les Steckel.
Yeah, couldn't find – that's right, Les Steckel, Trevor. Steckel.
Another name that could not actually exist.
No, it's true. Les Steckel.
No relation to Kenny Kitchen, but
– that's right. Yeah.
Les Steckel.
And he actually may have been the best of those last three, but
statistically, they put up some points.
Yeah.
They just didn't do it in Philly.
Right.
But he also brought the penalty path to one buck place.
Yes.
That if you jumped off sides, if you were flagged for holding in practice, you had to run a lap just like high school.
Yep. I love it.
It's called the penalty.
I love
called
it.
The penalty tackle
I love
back.
It.
Yeah. Bringing back.
Yeah. But yet Lovie Smith scoffed when I mentioned, "Hey, what about having some officials actually?
Oh yeah,
in your practices."
I love
scoffed
that.
At that.
I love that. I'm a grown man. Why do I got to run a lap? Oh, don't jump off sides. You're a grown man.
Exactly. We're paying you not to jump off sides. We're paying
ask
you to
Tom
block
Coughlin
somebody.
And, I'm a grown and Doug man, Marone and Jacksonville how that worked for that
sides.
Last year.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what they did. But anyway. But you know the Dungy. You know, again, And a lot of people became Buccaneer fans during that Super Bowl run. I understand. I'm an old man, so I've been around a lot longer. So I saw the beginning. I didn't really watch football the first year, but the second year. So it really – what Tony was able to do, because this team didn't make the playoffs.
You're talking about from 77 on.
Yeah. From 1982 until 1997, they didn't make the playoffs. That's an entire generation of Buccaneer fans.
It was
fans.
Like the Buccaneer black hole.
It was awful. I mean, they just could not get out of their own way, from drafting Bo Jackson, never played it down, to –
Trading Steve Young.
They had Steve Young, a Hall of Fame quarterback, a multiple Super Bowl. They traded him because they drafted Vinny Testaverde, who never made the playoffs here in Tampa, who didn't get his second contract. I mean, it was just blunder.
What was the gap from when
after
to when?
Blunder, 82 to 97.
Mm-hmm. Man.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
We're 5 years away from that now?
Don't say that. I will say that. Okay, but
we're 5 years away from that now.
In between that, there's been, you know, 10-6 and a 9-7 season at least.
Oh, okay.
There was none of those things
some
between
false hope.
83. There were 83 was a 2-14 season, and then you had Lehman Bennett with back to back 2-14 seasons. I think Ray Perkins, his best year was maybe 6-10, mm-hmm. Maybe a 7-9 season.
But
then
tell
you
what,
had a Richard Williamson that was 3-13 in 1991.
I'll tell you what, that 2-14 season that Lovie Smith turned in mm-hmm. in his first year here, though, where they did not win a single home game.
Yeah.
They went winless at home.
Right.
That's one of the worst seasons ever in Buccaneer football.
I mean, you got to go back to 76 when they lost all 14 games because they only played 14 back then. You don't know, if you know that, Trevor.
I did.
They played 6 preseason games and 14 regular season games.
Yikes.
Yeah. A few fans bitch now about paying for preseason. Let's watch
they,
6 preseason expansion football
then.
Games.
Yeah, wow.
But anyway, of course, tickets were a lot cheaper. But the point is there was this huge black hole in this area. And Tony, and as I wrote in the column, I'll admit, when they Steve Spurrier was the first choice, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody was gung-ho on Steve Spurrier. And
Jimmy
even
Johnson.
As a Florida State fan, I was, number one, get him out of Gainesville so you know Bobby Bowden can win some more. But number two, it would bring an exciting brand of football back to the Bay Area. And we saw what happened when Steve Spurrier made it to the NFL. Thank God he didn't take the job.
Right.
Jimmy Johnson, coming off the Super Bowls in Dallas and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
What did he do after that? I think he took the Dolphins to the playoffs once or twice, but that was it. He fizzled out.
You know what? You got to hand it to Sam Wyche because the guy was more, like you said in the column, more of a carnival barker than anything else. But one of the funniest things he did was when Jimmy Johnson was out of football and was doing some broadcasting at the time before he went to the Dolphins. Sam Wyche allowed Jimmy Johnson to come in and address the team, and Jimmy wore a Buccaneers jacket on. And Sam, and the premise was that Sam Wyche had been fired in season in 1995, and that the Jimmy Johnson was going to come in and take over. Now that was when they started off 5-2,
yeah.
And so the story was actually, wow, look at these Buccaneers under Sam Wyche. They may actually do it. But there were so many rumors going around that Sam was going to get fired heading into 1995 and that Jimmy Johnson was one of those names being floated around that Sam and Jimmy were like, hey, like, why don't we play a practical joke on the team here, you know? And so Jimmy Johnson comes strolling in with cameras on, strolling in the Buccaneer locker room wearing a Buccaneer jacket and saying, you know, there's a new sheriff in town or something like that, you know.
How old were you in 95? Were you even born?
Yeah, I was 4.
Okay. Yeah, that was the
depending
five
on when it
that
was
the 5-2 that ended in 7-9.
Yeah.
And Sam was fired. Now Sam, again, I wrote in there, he was at least entertaining. I mean, you never knew what you were going to get from the guy.
It is an absolute shame that nobody has. This has got to be one of the TV stations around town.
He's got the clips of some of his press conferences.
The last press conference.
Oh, my gosh.
It was, to this day, and I've been doing this for over 2 decades, it was, to this day, the most epic meltdown I've ever seen from any person associated in football in a live press conference setting.
Yeah.
It was.
Sam Wyche?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolute meltdown. I remember,
like every question, he just went aggro.
I remember Don Banks and Rick Stroud were behind me, and they were like kind of talking to each other, and this is like in the bowels of the stadium at Tampa Stadium,
right when
you walk in, right before you get in the locker room, there's like a little media concrete wall area, and Sam was holding court, and of course everyone knew he was going to get fired. It was his last game. They just got trounced by the Detroit Lions, like 37-10 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Sam had wanted the Buccaneers to wear the orange jerseys and the orange pants. Hardy Nickerson and Paul Gruber saw that when they laid out all of the pants and the jerseys together, and they said, "No, we're not going.
We're not going out
like
on the
creamsicles.
Yep.
We'll do half creamsicle, but not. We're not going all the way creamsicle."
I would have loved it.
Of course, it would have looked pretty.
Yeah,
pretty interesting.
I would have loved it.
It was actually Color Rush before there was Color
That's
Rush.
That's what I'm
True.
Saying. I would have loved it.
The Buccaneers were ahead of their time, and they didn't know it. But the thing is, Sam was having this meltdown press conference, and he knew he was going to get fired, and he knew that they were going to get, they were going to have regime change. Trent Dilfer was benched after the first quarter, and the reason why he was benched, according to Sam, was, he was just exhausted out there. Now, this is a professional athlete we're talking about.
Been a long season. He was
been a
tired.
Long season. He just was exhausted. Now, Trent Dilfer had thrown for 100 yards in the first quarter. He was on pace to have a 400-yard game, okay? But he did have a sack fumble that was scooped and scored. I think he threw a pick, but I think he also threw a touchdown maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Or he played okay.
Played like Trent Dilfer.
Yeah, the good and the bad. But then they put in Casey Weldon, I guess, who finished the game. So Rick and Don Banks work for the Times right behind me, and they're talking like talking about like this. And Sam is talking, and all of a sudden he says, "What's going on back there? Do you care to share something funny?"
In the middle of the press conference,
like a teacher
Yep.
In junior high. Okay? And they're like, no, no. Don't want to share. And I mean, it was just the most awkward thing.
Isn't that also the press conference that he started preaching about, because it was near Christmas?
Yes, yeah.
About Jesus his Jewish friends?
Yeah. What he said was... Including the owner. He wanted to wish everyone out there a Merry Christmas. I mean, it was like just rambling on and on.
It's like when a guy has a mental breakdown and he just... You've seen it like in movies and
just
stuff.
Snaps.
I don't know if you've seen it in real person, but just... It was uncomfortable. I was there with a big recorder working for Scott, transcribing quotes. Yeah.
And
very uncomfortable. I have that press conference somewhere on a cassette.
We need to bring that out because it was epic. But so Sam is rattling on about, you know, the birth of Christ, and this is the season, you know, Jesus is the reason for the season, and Merry Christmas out there to all the Buccaneer fans, and just trying to suck up. Then he remembers, oh my gosh, the owners are Jewish. Oh, and happy Hanukkah to our Jewish friends.
Right.
It was like an afterthought.
Jeez, man.
You know, and it didn't work. The Blazers ended up firing him.
So. Yeah,
it was the best live tweets I would have ever had.
Oh my gosh. if that had been present day, or if there were Twitter back then,
oh yeah,
he would have owned social media. It would have been pound Sam Weish.
Yeah.
Pound Weish meltdown, you know.
But you know, it was bad. But then Tony came along, and as I wrote in the article,
it
too,
made it all good.
Tony Dungy, and now that I think about it, I'm going to go back and I should have put this in the story. Tony Dungy was the Kwon Alexander of coaching choices.
Yes, totally.
I'm like, really? Tony Dungy? Yeah. Who's this guy? Defensive coordinator
Lowest
for the
of
Vikings?
Expectations.
You know, nobody expected anything.
But he scored a big win right off the bat. He got Hardy Nickerson to re-sign.
Yeah?
That was big.
That was huge.
Because Hardy was on the way out the door because
he was
sick and tired of Sam's BS.
Yep.
And, you know, he had made a Pro Bowl, and he had got the stats that he didn't get in Pittsburgh that he wanted, and he got the money. But he was on the way out the door.
Yeah.
And Tony's first win of that season was getting Hardy Nickerson to re-sign, because that was the whole key right there.
And then, but then the team started 0-4, got a win against Minnesota, proceeded to lose their next.
I think they were 0-6, I think, or
maybe
0-7 to start.
Yeah. It was bad. But anyway, it was 1-8. Then all of a sudden, things just kind of started coming together for this football team, and ended up finishing 6-10. And Trevor, I'm telling you, there's never been so much excitement over a 6-10 football team, because again, it wasn't you never felt that even when Sam Weish, you know, won 5 games or 6 games, whatever it was, that it really was building to anything. But you felt like the building blocks were in place, because we give Sam Weish and credit. And I think Rich McKay was the GM at the time for drafting Derek Brooks and Warren Sapp in 1995. So, and they had drafted John Lynch also. So there were some building blocks on that defense that Tony was able to continue to draft players and mold. And in 1997, this team started off 5-0. I think their fifth win was a Sunday night football game. This team hadn't been on national TV in a while. Sunday night football game is the Miami
TNT
Dolphins.
Against the Miami Dolphins.
And I think Dan Marino was the quarterback. I actually have that game on DVD.
You know,
I'm going to bring that and make you watch.
It was interesting because in 1996, his first year, which, by the way, was Tony Dungy's only losing season as a head coach ever.
Yeah.
Okay, his first season. That's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
You know, everybody points to the notable win out there in San Diego, which I was there for. It was crazy. They rallied from 14 down on the road to beat the Chargers, who were a pretty good team at the time, 25-17. Then that was in the middle of a 3-game winning streak. They beat the Raiders in overtime. They beat the Chargers on the road. They beat New Orleans 13-7. They lost to Carolina 24-0. They beat the Redskins at home 24-10. They lost at Minnesota 21-10. But they came back home, and the win that nobody ever talks about is they beat the Chicago Bears 34-19. They absolutely kicked the Bears' ass on offense, defense, and Carl Williams had a punt return for a touchdown. Yeah. They really owned all three phases of that game, and Chicago was just a team at the time, Trevor. They would come down with 30,000 Bear fans.
Maybe more than that. There were times when it was like Soldier Field South down
there. It really was. And there were so many Bears fans in attendance. And I remember that stadium was half empty at the end of that game. But every single Buccaneer fan was there staying till the end and cheering that team off the field.
Yep.
And they knew that they had something special going into 97, and they didn't disappoint with that 5-0 start.
Yep, and they ended up, you know, winning the division and
it was
hosting.
The belief that the Dungy put into this team. You know, he just said, stay the course, stay the plan, and just keep doing what we're saying to do, and it's all going to turn around.
Pat Yuzinskas made a point. I had posted the story on Facebook, and Pat was covering the team for the Tribune at the time, and he was talking about, you know, how you can't root for the team. You can't root if you're a beat writer. You can't root for the players and all those things. And he's right about that. But he said there was one instance, though, and one thing that always stood out about Tony Dungy to him is he always rooted for Tony Dungy. But Michael Husted went through a stretch where he just couldn't hit the broadside of a barn with a kick. And everybody was like, you got to replace this guy. You got to replace this guy. And Tony said it multiple times. He's my guy. I'm sticking with him. Didn't know until the end of the year Michael Husted's mother was battling cancer. He was flying up to Virginia to visit her, you know, whenever he had an off day and things like that. This guy was good. And Tony Dungy said, you know what? We're not – you're going to be our guy. You take care of your mom the best you can. Mm-hmm. Do the best you can for the team. And Michael Husted ended up making some very important kicks that season and later on. But it was those things that Pat said really stood out to him about Tony Dungy. And the whole point of my story was I don't take sides on the whose team won the Super Bowl. It doesn't matter. If it was Dungy's team, it was John Gruden's team, they've got a Super Bowl. And Tony got his Super Bowl. Life has a way of evening things out, and karma comes around, and good things happen to good people, and that's what happened. But as good of a football coach, and we look at his accolades, and you see that he wears the yellow jacket in Canton and all of those things, as a person, this guy during the season, Trevor, was doing a prison ministry, going to the prisons in the morning before football practice and meeting with prisoners. I mean, this guy's son committed suicide. Now, this was after he left Tampa. His 18-year-old son, who Scott knew very well because he was at practice a lot.
He was a ball boy out there for years. James was out there a ton.
Kind of a nerdy kid. You know, I remember he wore the glasses. You know what I mean? Just a kind of a happy-go-lucky kid. You never
always happy,
would
yeah.
expect that from somebody. And it was such a shock the morning that it came out. I was driving. I heard it on 620 or whatever the sports station was at the time. But
I thought the most telling line in your column about that was that Tony Dungy was at his son's funeral actually comforting other people.
Yes. You know when you see pictures of a funeral and the pastor's comforting the family as they walk out of the church? It was Tony Dungy doing that to people, you know, to other family members and even some people that got in. So he's just a quality human being, and that's overused a lot. Oh, this guy's a great guy. But again, and I wanted to put this in there, and I didn't really know how to word it. All of us have skeletons in our closet, right? Tony Dungy probably has a skeleton too. But his is more just like a little bit of bone dust. You know what I mean? Yeah. I got a whole skeleton
He'll tell you what his big skeleton was. Or actually, his father, Wilbur, told me what the big skeleton was.
What?
Wilbur used to come around to the old Buccaneer Heaven store, the Buccaneer Magazine.
Morning of games a lot of times,
Peter Report,
right? And buys merchandise.
Offices. Yeah. And I used to know Wilbur very well. Matter of fact, Tony Dungy's daughter, Jade, went to the same preschool as my daughter Ellie did, and Ellie almost drowned in Tony Dungy's pool. That's a story for you right there. Okay, I'll tell you that in 1 second, but what Wilbur said was that the Tony, and this has been publicized too, it's not like breaking news, but Tony got into a fight in a basketball game. He actually was like punching a kid, and he got ejected. And I guess Wilbur went to the locker room, you know, and he said, you know, does that make you happy? You know, because did you accomplish what you wanted to accomplish? Because your team's out there playing without you now. You know, was that worth it? That selfish moment right there? And that's one of the things that kind of scarred Tony and made him a team guy and a team believer and really kind of a nonviolent guy after that, even though he went on to play football, which is a violent game.
But that
game
might be the biggest skeleton the guy's got in the closet. He got in a scrap basketball game one time.
You know what I mean?
I mean, we don't know what, you know, everything about everybody, but I feel pretty darn comfortable that this man. And again, Christians get a bad rap, and we're not going to get into the political, I mean, the religion thing, because we'll get a million comments. But, you know, hypocrites, you know, talking people about hypocrites. And there's a few people in this world. Billy Graham, I think, is one guy that never really had any major scandals. Tony Dungy's another guy like that. You know what I mean? When you profess yourself, as a Tim Tebow does, you know, and you put yourself in the limelight like that, you've got to back it up. And Tony Dungy always backed up his faith. And he didn't cram it down anybody's throat. He had chapel, whether you wanted to come or attend or not. He didn't force guys.
Such a calm guy. I remember getting invited to his house. And Tony would come to my daughter's birthday parties because she was really good friends mm-hmm. with Jade. So, and it was kind of funny. He'd be like, hi, Scott, you know. You know, and everyone's like, oh my gosh, Tony Dungy's at your daughter's birthday party. I'm like, well, yeah, they're friends, you know. Right. And I know Tony, and he knows me, obviously, from covering the team. So I went to Tony's house in Avila, and Ellie couldn't swim. I think she was 3 years old, maybe four, and she was just
That's
getting
bad,
ready.
Bad parenting, by the way, that you haven't taught your kid to swim at four. But go ahead.
Well, I think it was three, actually.
All right.
And no, it was four because we just had Logan, and my wife at the time, she went to go get changed. I was in full clothes, like shirt, shorts, mm-hmm. wallet, keys in my pants, all that stuff. And I had Logan in my arms, and Jade, who had floaties on, was in the pool. Come on, Ellie, come on. And I looked back, you know, at Ellie, and I said, Ellie, you need to wait for Mom. And Ellie was a little mischievous girl at the time.
Still is.
Still is, yeah. And she started walking right down those steps. And one, two, three, boop, and there she goes under.
To the bottom.
And we were one of the first ones there, and there was a pregnant lady at the side of the pool who saw this happen. And
she immediately went into labor and had a baby on the pool deck at Tony Dungy's house.
And Tony Dungy delivered her.
Yes,
no,
he did.
No, I'm kidding. He
and
didn't
blessed the baby, and no. Baby turned out to be Tim Tebow.
But the
wow. What a story. What a story.
That's all, folks. Story. Thanks for listening.
Wow. I didn't see that coming.
What a story.
No, she says, oh, my gosh, she's drowning, you know. And so I start running, and I jump in the pool with Logan in my arms. Yeah. I keep him above the water because he was like a newborn at the time. And so cell phone completely fried.
Your Nokia 604 flip phone.
Something like that. Yeah. It was a flip phone. Flip phone, yeah. Wallet completely, you know, soaking wet, all this stuff. And I grab Ellie. She's coughing and gagging. Got her in one arm. I got Logan in the other. I'm walking up the steps to get out of the pool. Wife comes out. Oh, my gosh, what happened? Tony comes out, and he says, and I'm soaking wet from, like, the chest down, right? I'm just soaked. And Ellie's crying and gagging. And Tony comes out. He's like, is everything okay, Scott? You know? And I said, yeah, she almost drowned in the pool, you know, but she's okay. Oh, that's good. Glad to hear it. You know, just so calm. like you can't say anything to get under the guy's skin.
Yeah.
You know? He had this perfect calm.
In the midst of tragedy, right.
In tragedy, and in the eye of the
potential
storm.
Potential tragedy, yeah.
Yes. And it's just one of the best qualities about him.
Yeah. No, Tony was a great guy. And I mean, I would say
well-deserved for the Ring of Honor, too.
No,
well-deserved.
I agree. And I'm glad he's getting in. He deserves to be in. Next show, we're going to need to talk about who we think should next be. And I know that you tweeted out Rondae Barber. I'm a big Hardy Nickerson guy.
Yeah,
Hardy needs to get in a little bit too.
Rondae needs to get in.
James Wilder wouldn't mind seeing.
You know what's crazy was when I was in the pool, right? You know what I could have used there? I could have used a boat or some type of flotation device.
Well, you know,
rather than getting soaked when I'm rescuing my daughter in Tony Dungy's pool.
If Tony would have been smart, he would have went to T.A. Mahoney's, Scott.
Agreed.
T.A. Mahoney's over off of Adamo Drive between Brandon and Tampa. Been there since 1946. No excuse, because they have every single thing you need for a boat, even for your pool. Probably, I'm sure they have floaties and life preservers. In fact, I know they do. All safety equipment that you need. Look, if you need marine supplies, if you need repairs, and if T.A. Mahoney's doesn't have it, just stop looking, because they don't make it. If they don't have it, they'll order it for you. That's the kind of guys they are. Mike Mahoney, Matt over there, great guys, been there a long time. T.A. Mahoney's is that type of place, Scott, where you walk in and your family, right?
Absolutely.
Nobody, you're not going to be. You don't need to be nervous walking in there. What are these guys going to think of me? I just bought a boat. I don't want to look like a nerd. No, they make everybody feel comfortable. They've got a great staff over there. They've got everything you need. And when I go in there, Scott, I see guys just sitting around. Like, I mean, I keep waiting for the checkerboard, like it's Andy Griffith's show to break out. I mean, literally, that's the kind of people these people are. Salt of the earth, honest, integrity people. They will help you out. They will give you the best possible deal they possibly can. Whether it's boat repairs, boat supplies, anything you need for the Marine supplies, they can handle it. That's T.A. Mahoney's, tamahoney.co.com. You can find them on the web, or you can stop by, but make sure you let them know you appreciate them sponsoring the Pewter Nation podcast. Guys, we're going to try and do something after rookie minicamp on Saturday, if it works out, kind of give you a mini version of the podcast, so we can kind of give you our impressions and find out and tell you who the next Adam Humphreys or Peyton Barber. Was a guy that was here last year that, you know, you saw a little bit
2 years
of, you know, a couple years ago.
And we'll let you know how Vita Vea handles the heat and how fast Ronald Jones is and everything you want to know about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers draft
class. Real quick,
before
Trevor's computer crashes real fast, I have to. There's a 4-page thread on our message boards with people slamming you, Scott, for being against Vita Vea and wanting Derwin James. And I'm like, apparently they were listening to Trevor and I were more along the James line. You have been on the Vea train since January, or
I'm pretty
at least
sure we
January.
Said in the podcast that they're referencing. I'm pretty sure all, well, you less than us, but like, we get the pick.
Right.
The team was terrible on the D line. Right. So, like, we get it. Sure. I think you and I, Mark, would have both picked Derwin James.
Right.
I would have because he was my higher ranked player. You obviously think he would have had more of an impact, but like I'm pretty sure all three of us were like, okay, I mean,
right.
it's still a
but
D-line
I mean, but
pick.
Scott, but even in that podcast a couple weeks ago, Scott was defending.
I was
Vea.
The most pro Vita Vea of the three.
Last person on the planet.
I mean,
that you can say, wow, what a hater on the Vea. Pick.
I couldn't
the
believe it.
The last person on the planet.
I thought this was like That's a joke hilarious. Thread for a minute, but anyway, I just had to clear that up.
All right, anyways,
we appreciate everybody listening to this edition of the Peter Nation Podcast. For Trevor Sikkema, Scott Reynolds, I'm Mark Cook, saying we'll see you later for another edition of the Peter Nation Podcast.
Out.
Out.